WDIY Special News Feature. Yom HaShoah is a day of remembrance of those who perished in the Holocaust. Jewish families, congregations, and communities will observe Yom HaShoah on the evening of April 7th through April 8th in 2021. It is observed in many communities by a telling of survivor stories by those who escaped Nazi extermination. 76 years have passed since the end of the genocide in 1945, which means that many who survived it directly must be very elderly or were too young when they experienced the horrors at Nazi hands to really remember it. Every year we have fewer people who can speak of their experiences. In order to maintain the pledge of never again, many feel that the stories must be told so no one forgets and no false narratives deny the events that happened in Europe during the Second World War. Many second and third generation survivors have learned their families' stories and continue to tell of the bravery, intrigue, and kind helpers who got their parents and grandparents to safety during the war. Third generation survivors may be the last family members who actually knew the people whose stories they tell. Today we hear from two third-generation survivors, Nicholas Blue and Tama Tamarkin. Nicholas Blue is a recent graduate of Muhlenberg College, currently working as an admissions counselor at Alvernia University in Reading. Nick is a third-generation survivor. Welcome, Nicholas. I am so glad to hear your story today, and thanks for sharing it with WDIY. Could you please begin by introducing us to your grandparents?
Absolutely. First off, Marcy, thank you so much for having me. I'm really privileged to be able to speak about my grandparents and their experience with the Kindertransport program. Both of my grandparents were members of the Kindertransport program, which was a program set up by King George in the United Kingdom that granted permanent citizenship to German, Austrian, Hungarian, and Czech Jewish children to obtain permanent residency in the UK. My grandparents were participants of the Kindertransport program. This was a program set up by King George in 1938, which sponsored 10,000 German, Austrian, Hungarian, and Czech Jewish children and granted them permanent residency visas to the United Kingdom. For my grandparents, this was their only hope, as I'm sure you can imagine them being German Jewish meant that if they didn't get out, they would have been tortured and been put to death in concentration camps. And unfortunately, this was the fate for both of their parents, both sets of their parents and their family left behind in Germany. My grandfather was able to get out because his mother was a teacher at a private Jewish day school, and she had a connection through the Jewish agency that was looking to get children out. So a very kind, wealthy Jewish doctor in London actually agreed to sponsor him as well as six other German Jewish girls and five German Jewish boys and put them up in a hostel with staff that he had prepared for them. And my grandmother was able to escape because she was sponsored by her grandmother, who managed to escape Germany right before the war began.
How old were they when this story started, when they got on the transport?
My grandmother was 7 years old and my grandfather was 12.
And where did they live when this story begins?
My grandfather lived in Berlin and my grandmother lived in Cologne.
So what kind of help, you mentioned two people, what kind of help did they get to be able to get on the Kindertransport?
Absolutely. So in order to be able to get out of Germany through this program, you had to have a sponsor to be able to pay, like for the children, once they arrived in the UK, they need to have a place to go and they need to have some financial stability, and the British government needed to see that. So the doctor who told the Jewish agency that he wanted to sponsor the 12 German Jewish children had the financial means to do it, and he just told the agency, I'll take in 12 children, whoever that may be, and I'll put them up in a house and provide staff for them. So that happened for my grandfather and for my grandmother. The kind of help she got to escape was that her grandmother sponsored her. So everyone was required to have a sponsor and proof that they were going to be able to go somewhere safely.
I understand that almost nobody got out unless there were helpers somewhere. Where did they live after the war was over?
So this is where it gets really interesting. So my grandfather would always talk about the fact that when he arrived at the hostel where he was living, set up by the doctor, that he was only there for 6 months because he arrived in March of 1938, but then in September, all children then had to evacuate London because it was being bombed. And so not only did my grandfather manage to leave Germany and start a new life, not even knowing English, being pretty much as he knew it, orphaned, uncertain of the future, but then he had to leave the hostel where he finally got adjusted to and accepted the reality to then leave there and go and escape London. So my grandfather, during the war, managed to escape to boarding school, and he was a potato planter for his war work, and that's where he found his love for engineering. So he managed to leave the city of London and go to the countryside, and my grandmother was able to also go to boarding school. And then, surprisingly, they came back to London. They met through a mutual friend who said, oh, look, Walter, here's this wonderful girl, Linda, who was also on the kinder transport. And so they, quickly after the Holocaust was over, and sometime after in the mid-50s, got married, settled in London, actually right around where my grandparents initially arrived at after they immigrated there. And they lived there until their early 80s.
Did they reunite with other family members once the war was over? Did they ever see their family again?
So, unfortunately for my grandparents, they pretty much knew that once the Red Cross letters they were using to communicate, which is sort of like a telegram, when those letters stopped coming in from their parents, they pretty much knew that both their sets of their parents had been killed, and that was unfortunately the case. My grandfather's sister, because she was too old for the kinder transport program, she had managed to escape to Palestine and join the Zionist movement. They reunited a few years after the war and were very closely in touch throughout their lives. And my grandfather's sister remained in Palestine, which was then Israel, for her entire life.
Nick, what made you decide to publicly tell this story? And what does it mean to you to be able to tell it?
What got me to share my story was the fact that I think that persecution is no stranger right now than ever before. We see countless examples of persecution, whether it's people being stopped at the border or political or religious persecution or refugees. My grandparents were refugees, and I think that their story needs to be shared with as many people as possible because, you know, I think that they went through so much and they almost faced death as a result of just being who they were. And it's just heartbreaking to see and hear when my grandfather was alive, him sharing his story so passionately. And I really feel privileged to have been able to share it with school students and here on WDIY. So I really think that my grandfather was so passionate about keeping his legacy alive and really just making it clear that he was a refugee and that his story needs to be shared right now more than ever.
Thank you so much, Nick. That was really wonderful. Is there anything you'd like to add before we go?
I just think that for my grandparents, it's just amazing how quickly life changed for them. They grew up in well-to-do families in Germany. They grew up unpersecuted, having happy, carefree lives. And just to see how quickly that flipped and changed for them as a result of the Holocaust, as a result of who they were. They went from safe neighborhood with safe friends and a loving family to being separated from their parents in the most cruel, heinous kind of way. I'll never forget when my grandfather said to me that when his parents took him to the train that was going to take him to the coast of the English Channel where he would get on a boat and go to the UK, that his grandparents said, "We'll see you soon," when his parents pretty much knew that they would never see their children again. And I just can't imagine how his parents felt in that moment, having to say goodbye, knowing that they would probably never see their children again, but also for him and all that uncertainty as to whether or not he would actually see his parents again. And just also that anticipation during the war when he pretty much had to accept the fact that his parents had been deceased, but it was also that sort of level of uncertainty, like, well, they could be alive, there's no official confirmation. There was that piece of where he didn't want to lose hope, but you didn't also know for certain. So I think that was incredibly hard for my grandparents, and imagine being 7 and 12.
I can't imagine, and I just hope that none of us ever have to live through something like that. You've illustrated it well with your words, so thank you so much, Nick.
Thank you so much, Marcy.
Tama Tamarkin is a school psychologist who recently became a board-certified behavior analyst. She lives in Allentown with her husband and 3 children. Welcome, Tama, to WDIY, and thanks for telling us about your bubby.
Thank you for having me.
Tama, tell us a little about your grandmother as a young person before the Holocaust.
Okay. So my grandmother, I call her Bubby. My Bubby was born in 1925. in a town called Lida in Poland, which is now considered part of Belarus. And she was the youngest of five siblings. She had three sisters and a brother. And Lida was a beautiful ancient city that had gone back centuries. And she was part of a prominent family. Going back to her birth, however, you know, when I think of my Bubby and when others think of her that know her story, they think of her as a survivor. And my Bubby has been a survivor since the day of her birth. She was born and she was a twin, and she was the only survivor of her birth, losing both her mother and her twin. So right from the beginning of her life, she was considered sort of a sole survivor.
How did it happen that she ran into danger during the Holocaust, and how did she escape death?
So the town of Lida, where she was living, was under Soviet control when she was a teenager. And in 1941, the Jews of Lida were put into a ghetto. Everybody into very small spaces, many families into really small apartments. In May of 1942, the Germans came and brought all the Jews out of the ghetto, divided them into left and right. And my Bubby was with her sister and her sister's husband and child, and they were put on the left. And her sister's husband begged one of the Nazis to move them to the right. He had known him because he had made some Nazi uniforms. He was a tailor. And they moved to the right. That day, on the left, 5,000 Jews of Lida were murdered. And in that group that were murdered, 57 of them were members of my family. So she returned to the ghetto, and in September of 1943, the ghetto was completely liquidated, and they were marched en masse to trains, which they would later find out were going to Majdanek concentration camp. My Bubby had an opportunity to run from the lines as she was approaching the trains. As a soldier saw her, told her she was too pretty for what was going to happen, and she decided to run. And as she ran, shots were fired at her. Actually, shots were fired. She doesn't know if they were fired at her or not because she escaped injury, and she was able to hide and escape from the train to Majdanek. But at that point, her sister and brother-in-law, and there were two babies, went to Majdanek, and they were killed there. And again, for a second time in my Bubby's life, she was the sole survivor of her family.
I understand that she then had some real adventures upon escaping.
She did. She actually, when she ran away from the train, she ran with a friend. So she had somebody with her for these adventures. And a Polish man in the village, a non-Jewish Polish man, helps them find the partisans. And she and her friend separated at that point, but she was taken in by a Russian partisan unit of Russian paratroopers, actually. And the only way she was taken in by them is that she told them that she could use a gun. She was 18 years old at that point, and she certainly didn't know how to use a gun, but she lied because she knew that that might be her ticket in. And during her time with the Russian partisan unit, she was a soldier. She helped them on many missions as they were trying to sabotage the Germans. And after a while, there were members, non-Jewish Polish and Russian members that were joining the group, and the leader of the partisan group thought that the anti-Semitism within the group was a bit dangerous. And so he helped her find the Bielski partisan group. And the Bielski were known as the Jewish partisan group, a family group whose goal was really to find Jews in the ghetto, to bring them into the woods, and to save them. Their only goal was really to save Jews. And she spent her last 3 months of the war prior to liberation as a member of the Bielski partisan group.
And there was a film made about them, wasn't there?
There was. The film was called Defiance. It starred Daniel Craig and Liev Schreiber. Something that was amazing about that film for my Bubby and for my family. Well, first for my Bubby, was validation because she saw her own story on this film and she really felt like it was portrayed very well. And so that was validation that her story was being told. But she was also being asked as a survivor, as one of the only survivors of the Bielski partisan unit, she was being interviewed when the film came out. And as she was being interviewed, she started to talk and talk more. And it was at that time that even though I had heard her stories and bits and pieces throughout my childhood, when that movie came out, I was able to sit down with her and get her story sort of from beginning to end, from her lips to my ears, which was an amazing, amazing gift.
It sounds like you had a really full relationship with her afterwards. How was it that she ended up in America, and how was it that you had this relationship?
So I'll back up and I'll say after liberation, she went back to her town, and it was there that she met my grandfather, and they ended up in a displaced persons camp called Fehrenwald in Germany, and they were there for 4 years before coming to the United States. And they had, in order to come, they needed family that would sponsor them, and they had family in upstate New York, in Troy, New York, that brought them over. So that's how they came. And at that point, when they came over in 1949, they had two kids. One was my Uncle Howard, who was the first Jewish child born after the war in this displaced persons camp. And the second was my mom, Reva. So they came over with two kids. They settled in Troy, New York. They had two more children. My Zadie, my grandfather, became a cattle dealer. And going back to your second part of your question, Marcy, how did we have this relationship? My family is so, so tight. My Bubby has four children, 10 grandchildren and 15 great-grandchildren and counting. And my cousins, her grandchildren, we grew up like siblings. Everybody was very close. And it was sort of that way, I think, after the war, that any family or any acquaintances from the war became so close. The children, my mom and her siblings, were sort of replacing those in the family that they had lost. So everybody was kept really close, spent holidays together. We still, you know, one of the silver linings of this pandemic, if you can say there are silver linings, is that every Friday we celebrate Shabbat on Friday, and every Friday my entire extended family, those four children, 10 grandchildren, and 15 great-grandchildren are on a Zoom together every single Friday. So we have remained close, and actually I think now we're even closer. So we really do get to see her, and my Bubby is still with us. She's 96.
Can you describe her as you know her now?
Whew. She is a force. She is a force. She's my Bubby. It's so hard to describe her in words. I feel strong emotions when I think of her. She's definitely our matriarch, and what she cares about most is family. And she just, every time we see her, it's, oh, I'm so glad you're together. Or every time we talk to her and I say, oh, I was with my siblings or I was with my cousins, it's always, I'm so glad that the family is together. That is what she values most. She's a great cook. She is very famous for her rugelach and for her brisket. Just a warm person, sort of has that magnetic personality where people want to know her and want to be close to her.
Well, I just have to thank you, Tama, for giving us such a lovely portrait of a dynamic and beautiful woman. Just thank you so much for letting us know who she is and telling us your story.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks, Nick and Tama, for your willingness to tell us more about your families so that we can also remember them on April 8th. Thank you for your time and willingness to share with our listeners. For WDIY News, this is Marcy Lightwood.